Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. Proudly nominated for a National Association of Broadcasters 2019, 2021, 2022, and 2023 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station, as well as the winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand knowledge and perspective. Today, Daniel Geller, our student producer, and I have our guest, Darwin Schurig. Welcome to the show, Darwin. Darwin is the founder and CEO of Schurig Solutions. And Schurig Solutions is in the business of medtech recruitment, which I'm sure we're going to hear more about. Before we get into that, Darwin, hopefully I'd like to think students on our campus listen to these podcasts and think about the wide breadth of careers that might be potentially available to them. How does somebody get into the business of medtech recruitment? Can you take us, give a sort of an overview of your career path to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And so first of all, like you asked specifically about, you know, medtech recruiting. So we're medtech, pharma and life sciences, but I don't know anybody at this point over 8 years that I've ever met that said, hey, I want to be a recruiter. I would have never in a million years thought that I was going to be doing what I'm doing.
Right. That rarely comes up in advising students. I have 25 years of doing this. No one's ever said to me, I want to be a recruiter for the
biotech. It's shocking, right? Like, yeah. Who wouldn't want that? I think recruitment is a really interesting from a rejection standpoint. So the numbers vary depending on what you look like, but 70% of businesses don't make it across all industries 10 years. Most people know that 30 to 40% of startups don't make it a year. Over 50% of those that do make it aren't around in 5 years. So that's just companies wide. Recruitment firms have less odds, and 80% of people that enter recruiting typically don't make it a year. So why is that? Well, we're talking college campus here. So if you go up try to make an introduction to a young lady or a young guy, and they reject you, it's over. You know, you're rejected. But in recruitment, there's a lot of indirect rejection. You know, you're reaching out to people, and the silence of not getting a call returned or an email returned, that constant being ignored, is hard for some people to handle. And so there's a great deal of rejection, particularly because nobody knows who you are. And since a lot of the industry, of people in the industry, are inundated with recruiters reaching out, I think it's like 80% of people don't reach out more than twice for whatever their reason is. So it's like, they're probably not going to make it. They're probably not going to reach out to me again, so I'll just ignore them. So it is, it can be a very, one of our sayings or that I've heard many times is, it's a horrible job, but it can be a lucrative career. Recruiting's a $200 billion industry across all business, across all industries. So you can certainly make an incredible living, but it's not typically something I would have never thought that I would be doing what I'm doing.
Well, how did you find it then? How did you go from, you were an undergraduate and studied something. It wasn't recruiting. What were your steps?
Yep. So I went, I went to school, mainly for sports. And then I figured I better get an education while I was there, because it wasn't good enough to do much after that. So, I got a bachelor's in allied health, focused in respiratory therapy, and then a business degree. And I went into, I was in the clinical world, ER, ICU, clinical world for several years. And then went back, got my MBA. I spent 12 years in corporate America, managed sales teams, business development, marketing, and contract negotiation. And then in 2015, I started this company. I knew somebody who was a friend that I'd met a long time ago who owned a recruitment firm. And I was a part of an acquisition. Two $2 billion business units were integrated. And 2 weeks after the company that integrated those finished them, they laid off like 250 of us from the old company. So that opened up an opportunity to look at something different. And my friend who owned a recruiting firm said, hey, why don't you take a look at this? And so I kind of begrudgingly did. And then after looking at it, I really felt like there were some things that we could bring to the, or I could bring to the marketplace and do things maybe differently than the things that I didn't like that recruiters did. I could just not do those and maybe put my own personal touch on it. And mm-hmm. I was going to meet people, you know, sell a service, a product, do business development, marketing. And I was most likely going to continue to train, mentor, relevant to developing people. And I just decided to take the chance of doing that for myself.
Cool. So you mentioned the switch from clinical health, so working in the ICU, the ER, things like that, into corporate uh-huh. America. How did that happen? What was the thought process?
No, so I care about patient care, about people, and that's why I went into that world. But at the same time, it's you're on your feet. It's hard work, you know, 12 and a half, 13 hour days in a hospital. And so I kind of knew long term that I didn't want to still be doing a patient care like that. And so I got an opportunity to move into to a sales relevant role clinically. And so that seemed to make a lot of sense. There was no call anymore. I had the opportunity to make more income, ironically. And so that was kind of, that made a lot of sense to me. So that was kind of the first transition from patient care into helping to promote, market, and sell the service of to companies and to hospitals.
Did you find yourself, I don't know what the right word is, right-sized, or these people who were in the same situation as you, the 200 plus, were they like your first clients that you tried to place?
No, because if I would have been, you know, if I was, the easy route would be, you know, if I would have, the challenges of getting into recruiting is, and for me, I'd never owned a business, so that's a challenge. And then I'd never been in recruitment. So there are two hurdles to potentially overcome. And then the third is the idea is you would want to enter an area with a lower barrier because you have certain knowledge there. So my real knowledge was in sales and marketing and funnel management and contract negotiation. So that would have made the most sense to place people with those areas of expertise with companies. Mm-hmm. But either I was really dumb or not, you know, or smart or whatever, but I did not want to do those areas to start with. So I focused on quality, regulatory, and engineering, which I literally knew next to nothing about. However, as a clinician, I think people go into the clinical world because they care about people, they care about outcomes. And so I felt like in quality in particular, that they would that would be a good segue. And it turned out to be the case. However, there were a lot of things that I had to learn along the way, which is probably part of the reason why I didn't make any money for the first 6.5 months. But it ended up being a very positive decision and process over the long-term health of the company, but not necessarily the easiest way to start.
Yeah. So it sounds like you started just on your own, not with this other, with this person who it sort of pulled you in a little bit. It sounds like you spun off on your own pretty quickly.
Right. Well, I didn't join his company. He was a part of a franchise and he shared the franchise opportunity.
I got it.
So I joined a franchise called Management Recruiters International. At the time, there's probably about 340 franchises across the world, probably 80-90% of those in the United States. But I joined that franchise model that he was a part of to kind of help, you know, in terms of legal and marketing templates and CRM and the recruitment, blocking and tackling aspects that I really had never been involved in before.
Cool. And I do want to hear more about this, and I want to hear more about what Shurig Solutions specializes in, but we need to take a break for our underwriting announcements. We'll be right back on with Health 411. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant, that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell, to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties, to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com. We're recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back. We are continuing our conversation with Darren Shurig, this founder and CEO of Shurig Solutions, a recruitment company. And we were in the last segment, Darren was telling us a little bit about how he got started. Without having to go through sort of a calendar of events, tell us where, so Shurig Solutions started in 2015, where is it now? And what kinds of, you know, med tech recruitment are you guys doing? Or is it more than that now?
Right, so 2015, I kind of think of as, sort of the training wheel year. As I started the company in the summer, really didn't have any idea what I was doing on several fronts. But in the fall, it was a nice epiphany because I wasn't making any money yet, but was starting to get contracts in place, get positions in place, and I really enjoyed what I was doing. So if you enjoy what you're doing and you're not getting paid for it, then it's probably a pretty good bet that, you know, for your students out there, like, focus on something not that is just about money, that you have a passion for. Mm-hmm. What is your personal why? And does it match up to what you're going to be doing? Because you're going to enjoy each day and be more passionate about what you're doing if that's the case. And then, you know, the next 4 years, the company was basically me, steadily grew in revenue to about a little over $500,000 in revenue, mostly focused on med tech. 90% of what we did was medical device quality, regulatory affairs, engineering. And so then the pandemic hit, and that was a very challenging situation because most of my clients were making surgical devices. All those elective surgeries went on hold. So we had a significant amount of revenue that didn't happen because those offers did not end up going through. And so I had to make some serious adjustments, which is, you know, not being able to make moves, make adjustments is, you know, one of the top six reasons why companies don't make it. So we pivoted and started to look at the IVD, life science, pharma, relevant to combination products market. And then from a positive standpoint, we ended the year just below about $15,000 less than what we had done the year before. And then we were more diversified, about 60% med tech and about 40% pharma life sciences after that. So we've added, ops and commercial roles since then. And then, we did about $1.37 million in 2021 and then a little over $2.5 last year in revenue. And then it's been a tough year for a lot of people with the economy. A lot of our partners that we'd done multiple jobs for in the first and second quarter last year were not doing business. The Fed raised the rate. It's more expensive to borrow money. So there's a lot of companies kind of waiting and watching or doing with less. So it's been a leaner year, but then a lot of positive things have kind of come from that. And the market's starting to pick up over the last 3 or 4 months for us. But anything RAQA, clinical, and then we've done about every engineering position. Operations, one of our team members owned a manufacturing facility for 20 years. So in terms of, you know, manufacturing, supply chain, operations. And then, you know, my background in commercial, we pretty much can do about any commercial position.
So as a recruiter, and this is, I think, important for students who are starting out, who are your clients? Is it the people you put in positions? Is it the companies you're hiring? What's the model look like?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the answer is yes.
It is, no. But I'm thinking if you are, let's say, a college senior, and you want to enter the world of, you know, pharma, biotech, whatever it's going to be, and you hear the word recruiter, like, what does that mean? Like, what should be going off in your head, kind of thing? Like, how do you fit in? So, how do you fit into the system?
I think you really need to understand what it is you want to do. You need to understand, you know, Larry Kaufman, LinkedIn Larry, look him up. He's got a great book that has to do with networking and benefiting other people. The NCG Factor, that is a fantastic book in terms of how to look at things proactively. But you have to understand that, like, okay, from a recruitment standpoint, most recruiters, if they spent most of their time talking to new grads, they'd be out of business. So nobody's going to pay me. To bring them new grads with no experience. And oftentimes you'll see people with a new master's or a PhD, and their perspective is, hey, I'm worth this, but that doesn't necessarily equate to industry. It's all about risk and managing risk. And so nobody's paying substantial fees for the recruitment firm to bring risk. You're paying them to bring efficiency, to avoid the cost of a mishire, and through that process to save you money because you bring the right talent on that's going to lead you to whatever objective it is, depending on that position that you're trying to accomplish, in a more efficient manner than doing it yourself, if that makes sense. So from a student standpoint, or a new grad standpoint, depending on what it is you want to do, I mean, obviously internships and the opportunity to shadow people is huge. I would be looking at what it is that you want to accomplish. Let's say it's clinical. Go and shadow a PA, go and shadow a respiratory therapist, go and shadow a nurse, go and shadow a physician, and make sure you understand what the day-to-day of that actually looks like before you enter into it. It's amazing when you look at, there are a lot of degrees. You're on a college campus. I value education. I've got multiple degrees and an advanced degree. And at the same time, there's a lot of people who go to college for a degree that can't necessarily feed them or bring specific value. So what is the ROI of why you're going, and are you really going to enjoy what it is you're going to be doing? So, you know, shadowing, understanding the marketplace that you're going into. You don't want to go into an area that is not going to grow, because that's going to limit your career growth. So I'll give you a quick example for those that are listening. But if you look at the med tech industry specifically, it grows annually at about 6-7%. But there are certain subcategories like monitoring, artificial intelligence, robotic surgical platforms, and artificial intelligence wearable technologies that are growing anywhere between 25-33% annually. So those microsystems that are growing, exploding, if you're going into an area that investment dollars are going into, that's something to really look at in terms of where you take your career, then most likely you're going to have opportunities if you come in and you bring value to be rewarded. It also means every single area, whatever the skill set is in that subset, that niche, if that niche is growing, the amount of talent in each subset is directly proportional to the revenue size of that niche, which means as it grows, where are you going to get the talent from? You're going to have to be more open to crossover talent. You're going to have to be more open to people ready for the next step in their career. And so thinking about things in that fashion will help you determine that you take your career in a path where you have more opportunities to grow versus be stagnant or lose your job and maybe have to go in a different direction.
And I'm just going to say, for any students who might be listening, three things that Darwin has emphasized are a passion for what you're doing, being flexible and adaptable, and knowing what you're getting into. and having an have a long-term view. And those are the identical things that your professors are telling you that are key to success in probably any class that you take. I just want to emphasize that. So it's the same sort of things. And I want to come back. We're going to have to take a break for underwriting. But I want to put a seed in Darwin's head. And I want to talk about the role of experience is another thing that you highlighted as we get into that. So we'll be right back with Health 411 after these underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7 The Bronx.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. You're listening to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and we are continuing our conversation today with Darwin Shurig, CEO and founder of Shurig Solutions, a medtech recruiting firm. And a couple things come out of I'm listening to you talk, Darwin, and I want to ask you about this sort of as a professional recruiter and hearing what you were saying before. A common struggle that students who are graduating, irrespective of degrees, even if they've had some internship or shadowing experiences, I'm willing to take an entry-level role, but all the entry-level roles, require experience. What does a professional recruiter say about that? You understand, the conundrum that some students find themselves in?
Oh, absolutely. And there's people that are in their careers 5 years, 10 years, 15 years that face the same challenge. Yeah. How do I get experience if nobody's going to give it to me?
Correct.
And so, emotional intelligence, problem solving, and how you interact with others is a premium skill set. And I love David Hawkins' work, if you're familiar with that. But
I am not. So if you could summarize it, that would be wonderful.
Letting go, power versus force, the levels of enlightenment. But he has a level of consciousness that goes from 0 to 1,000, and a good portion, according to him, 70-80% of the world lives at a level about 200 or below, which is below positivity, where positivity occurs. So when you think about how you interact with other people, how you bring value to other people, Larry, I talked about LinkedIn Larry, but the NCG factor, but if you're bringing value, how do you make yourself indispensable, whether it's your personal relationships, whether it's careers? How do you get experience that you don't have? Well, you have to figure out sometimes how to come in through the side door instead of the front door. So how do you differentiate yourself between other people? Oftentimes we'll have people, and this may not specifically talk to the student, but again, it's who is your network? Who do your parents know? What are you willing to do outside of the average person? Because we're such a microwave society, right? Mm-hmm. What are you willing to do? How hungry are you?
I'm gonna interrupt you because I'm a college professor, and I just want to say I'm seeing parallels here because I look for success in the classroom. Are there students who are just going to do the minimum stuff that's on the syllabus or the minimum to get by? But are the students who are really going to learn stuff in the class and succeed in the class? They're not the ones who are doing that. You're nodding. They're not the ones who are doing the minimum in the classroom. They're the ones who have the initiative for whatever the passion. The grit that they do more than just the minimalist kind of thing. And unfortunately, a lot of students do the minimum they need to do to get by. And
then they expect you to save them.
Yes, right. And then they don't get good grades and it becomes the professor's fault. But it's not.
It's not the professor's fault. You're responsible for your attitude. What can you control? Your attitude, your effort, and where you focus, what you focus on. Which comes back to level of levels of consciousness, emotional intelligence. So how do you bring value to other people? Make yourself indispensable. You know, if you're in that class, why are you in that class? Put your best effort forward. Find, give the professor reasons to reward you, not try to, you know, do your least and then come to the professor or somebody to try to save you, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'll have people say, hey, look, I want to get into this area. Well, the easiest way to get into a specific area is to do it at your own company. Well, wait a minute. Like, okay, if I have somebody, regulatory affairs is a really challenging niche to get into. I've only helped two people in 8 years come from other areas into it. Because again, a company's not going to pay us to bring potential risk. They want us to bring somebody that has done every, checks off every box, and then they're going to fit the culture. Culture is huge. I hope we get to talk about that a little bit more and relevant to why companies succeed and fail. Mm-hmm. But if you're at a company, and let's say you're in a quality role, and you like to get into regulatory, awesome. Go introduce yourself to the regulatory department. You should be working with them cross-functionally anyway. Who's the head? Go take them out to lunch and pick up the check. Ask questions. What projects do you have coming up? Do some research. Ask some intelligent questions. Volunteer. Mm-hmm. Yes, volunteer. What could you learn from that? First of all, you'll learn more about whether or not that's really something that, you know, be careful what you wish for, right? You don't want to get into something that you really don't like long term. But people do things for people they like, and they're going to like you more if you're mm-hmm. actually coming with a to help out versus looking for a handout.
Yes.
And so.
Oh, darn. You're echoing. So you sound almost like a college professor. I know that's not the hat you're wearing. But when I set up internships for students, I say, you know, mm-hmm. if the internship ends at 5, don't be the person who checks out at 5:05. Stick around. Right. Talk to people. Yes. Watch. Volunteer. Just do more. You're there as an experience. And you're saying that that has carryover into people's career yes. and jobs. And so I just want people who are listening to hear that.
I want to throw something out that just came to my mind that I think is vitally important and, you know, for your students, because the pandemic created this, obviously a lot of challenges, panic. There's a lot of positive disruption that's come from it, but it's also created a lot of potential laziness relevant to the remote world. And there are younger people, you know, everybody wants to work remote. I want more for less. And I would say that's a mistake. You know, if you are responsible and you brought value and you can be in a hybrid role and, you know, you deserve more autonomy, great. You know, everybody wants to be treated like an adult. And I like having autonomy, but there are people earlier in their career that look at it through the lens of easier for me. I want to be remote. I want to be able to do whatever I want. And you're missing out on huge opportunities to be mentored and to be around people with significant higher gravitas, emotional intelligence, and experience that you, that by being in a fully remote position that you might not be mature enough to handle yet. You know, people that work fully remote can either hang themselves or they got to set boundaries because they might work too much. But think about what you're missing out on by not being a part of that deeper company culture. Being
and I'm glad, because you mentioned culture before. I want to bring up culture again, because you're absolutely right. A lot of people graduating now want to work remote. They like the independence of it. But mm-hmm. I have this conversation with my own kids who are, you know, starting out in their careers and stuff. Are you missing the culture? Are you missing the ability to understanding like the meeting before the meeting? If you're remote all the time, you're not there.
Absolutely. And the, you know, there's certain functional areas where it's going to be hard for things to come back from fully remote with travel or hybrid roles, because those functional areas can be done remotely, marketing, regulatory affairs, certain aspects of design quality. But at the same time, you know, so from a company cost standpoint, should I pay a premium for somebody in Boston? Or reload somebody to Boston or LA or San Francisco when I can pay, you know, potentially 20-30% less for somebody that can do the job just as well, maybe in the Midwest, and then bring them in once a quarter. But then in terms of your general employee appreciation programs, career ladders, mentorship, leadership mentorship, all those things, you better be looking and considering how to make those stronger if you go that route. But absolutely, if you're remote more, there's more opportunity for distraction. There's more opportunity to miss out. There's less opportunity to be involved in things that are happening after hours or during the lunchtime, or to get involved with projects that are happening. that could really benefit you and also build your relationships with people that could be valuable down the road.
And one of my thoughts, and I just want to answer this, and then we don't have a lot of time before we get to our next segment, but one of my thoughts, one of the reasons a lot of companies survived the pandemic and going remote is because they already had the face-to-face relationships. They already had relationships with their colleagues. They already knew each other. Now, and the company survived because of that. If had people have these remote roles and they're never building, never become part of the culture, is that a problem going forward in the industries that you recruit for?
I think it definitely can be. And I think that's a great lead into what I think is most important when you look at whether you're, I just did a presentation at the Regulatory Affairs Professional Society Convergence Conference 2 weeks ago, and it was talent management strategies, the hired versus the hired. So what the hiring managers should be looking at versus a candidate should be looking at. But I look at everything relevant to why companies succeed versus they fail, which I referenced earlier. But again, 70% of companies across all industries don't make it 10 years. And so when you look at that, there's 5 to 6 main reasons why companies succeed versus they fail. One of the more nuanced aspects over the last 10 to 15 years is companies that value outcomes, analytics, and data, and how they read it and utilize it. In the age of the metaverse, AI is everywhere. Yeah. Digital optimization is vitally important and being looked at every single functional area of running a business right now. So that's really important. However, the 3 of the top 5 to 6 every single time has to do with leadership relevant to mission and vision, to lead company alignment, and then talent. And so the cost of mishires are vitally, vitally important. Poor leadership, that all comes back to your employee engagement. If you have lower employee engagement, poor communication, you will have more wasted resources. Again, the cost of mishires can be anywhere from 3 to 7 times the annual comp. And the other thing that I'll throw in, and then I know you've got a couple thoughts that I can see you want to pop in there, but
I'm bubbling.
Understand that annual voluntary turnover, okay, is 25% across all industries. That means a fourth of the talent walks out the door every single year. And those are usually not the people that you want to lose. So when it comes to wasted resources on training, onboarding, hiring, opportunity cost, depending on that position, okay, it's significant. And to replace somebody that annually voluntarily walks away is anywhere from 1/2 to 4 times their annual compensation to that company.
Cool.
So understanding your personal why, what you want to do, and what the mission and the culture is something that you should really look at.
Okay, so we're going to come back and we're going to hear more about talent management strategies from Darwin Schwerig, but we'll be right back after these underwriting announcements. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We are continuing our conversation with Darwin Schwerig, founder and CEO of Schwerig Solutions. In the break, Darwin, you mentioned that Schwerig Solutions does some things that are unique compared to other recruitment firms. Can you tell us what they are?
Yeah, absolutely. So June was our 8-year anniversary. We've always been an outcomes and analytics-driven company. So during that time, 94% of our offers have been accepted. 53% of those candidates have accepted offers have been promoted within 24 months. So they're fitting the culture, doing good work and being rewarded. And then they stay 1/3 longer than the industry average relevant to retention, which is really important. But post-pandemic, there's 3 things that we've been doing. As far as I can tell, nobody else is doing, but we help Number one, our companies, we partner with them to help them customize their interview process to delineate between the cultural fit versus the technical skill in any functional area. A lot of companies don't do that well. You know, somebody's a 12 out of 10 technically in a functional area, but they have low emotional intelligence. They don't get along well with others. You shouldn't hire them. Vice versa, if everybody likes them and they check off all those boxes, if they don't have the relevant skill, you shouldn't hire them. So we help them do that to avoid the cost of mishires, have higher employee engagement, less wasted resources. Post-pandemic, we marked something called Top Talent Accelerant. So we create a really remarkable candidate experience for attraction that differentiates our partners' positions versus the white noise in other positions. And then we also created a system of greater efficiency for our partners where everything that happens in the system happens in real time during the hiring process. So again, less wasted resources. They don't interview people they shouldn't interview. Mm-hmm. And we're filling roles about 40% more efficiently post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So those are the three things that differentiate us.
Just to back, I understood what you meant by custom, like streamlining the interview process and moving fast so you don't waste it. What did you mean by traction? Remember, I'm not in the business world, so you have to fill that in with me.
So attraction.
Oh, attraction. Oh, sorry, I misheard.
So a lot of the areas that we work on, you know, people are inundated by recruiters. We have one functional category. We do a lot of polling through Indiana University, and so one of our functional categories that we 900 professionals were. Polled in February, we're getting reached out for new opportunities 1 to 2 times a day to 4 to 5 times a week. I mean, that's just insane. Wow. They don't even have time to talk to all the people reaching out to them. But if they talk to 3 recruiters, maybe they've spoken to the hiring manager, maybe they haven't, maybe they understand the product's positioning in the marketplace. And in our world, that's all how it benefits patients or access for patients, or it creates improved efficiency in the hospital or healthcare system so that we can spend those dollars elsewhere. Maybe they understand that and how that compares to the competition, and maybe they don't. And then they share job description, which 30% of the time they're wrong or the vanilla. So we create a format where the candidate gets all that information in one place. They get to understand the personality of the hiring manager. They get to understand what's cool about the company, how that compares to the competition. And so it's all about improving the candidate experience to the benefit of our partner. And most companies don't have anything like that.
Oh, pretty cool. A lot of the things you're saying are making me think about this. Remember, I'm a college professor here. Is that you are probably very you're laughing, you know, just like my kids.
That's okay.
Yeah. Many of the students I talk to, and one of the things I'm thinking about listening to you is, I can tell you're used to talking about the leaders in industry, the titans of industry, so to speak, who came to where they are through however they got there to some process. Do they understand the newer and mid-level, the younger people coming into their business that might not be just like them, but can still be successful? In the med tech industry?
I think that is such a great question. I don't know if I'm the best person to answer it, but I will say that, I mean, I was just at a conference in Savannah. I presented on Saturday, and it's like Gen Z, you know, half the time it's like, I don't even know which gen we're on, Gen X, Gen Z, Gen Y, whatever. And one of the gens, they said they're what did they call them? The quiet gens, or like, they don't respond to anything. They don't, you know, they only respond to texts, or they don't want to get on the phone. They said you have to text and set up a phone call in your own family versus just calling the person, which I was like, okay. So, I mean, there are always opportunities to get to understand one another better. And so I would say, again, emotional intelligence is a premium. And it's easy to understand your perspective, but putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, how we communicate, oftentimes people listen to respond versus listen to understand. You know, are you really listening to understand what their point is? Pause, validate, you know, if there's an emotion to connect to, what is that emotion? And then make sure that you understand, and they know that you understand, because if you do that, then they're probably going to be more open to hearing what you have to say. And so it depends, like, to answer that question specifically, it depends on the company. It depends on the background of the leader. It depends on the culture. There's so many varying pieces, but I think the key thing that I can share is You know, personal growth. Check out David Hawkins, you know, level of consciousness. Where are you at on that? How open are you to other people's perspectives? And then, you know, being a problem solver, being somebody that looks at things proactively, and how you be a bringer of value versus a taker first, because those things are going to help you understand other people better, and more likely than not, you're going to engage in a positive fashion with them versus a negative one.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. I'm going to imagine myself as I own a company. I have a need in the company. I want to hire somebody. I can't go out there and, you know, go through, you know, I guess 1,000 or 2,000 LinkedIn, whatever it is. So I'm going to hire Shurig Solutions, right? Okay. And so it sounds to me that part of your job is to research the company, find out about the company. And so if I run this company, I have a need now. What's a typical timeline to I can get somebody in that chair doing the job?
It really depends on the position, and it depends on how we're working with them, and how we work with companies has changed quite a bit over the, excuse me, the last 8 years, because you know, most companies are paying us money up front now. And if we're helping to customize their interview process, that first starts with defining the values that you want to attract to your company versus you want to eliminate. How you set that up in your interview process is vitally important. It's nuanced. Even how you ask the questions and you grade them is different than the technical piece. So first it starts there, and then there are things that we do in terms of there's some activities in terms of with the hiring manager and personality profiles and things of that nature, because we really want to understand exactly what the have to haves are versus the would be nice to have. And then once we understand those things, it's all about hunting. You know, if you're searching for, you know, red snapper, and there's, you know, you're fishing for red snapper and there's only grouper there, you're probably not going to be very successful. So in recruiting, we always say there's plenty of people that will let you work for free. So, you know, waste your time. So you really have to understand what it is you're looking for. And then there's, depending on how much talent in that area, the only way to do it is you go out and you systematically reach out in the right way to have conversations, to understand what they're looking for, and then attract them to the opportunity if they have the right interest and the right skill set. And so, you know, from an outcome standpoint, we've been blessed to beat the industry averages in that regard. But it really, again, it depends, you know, on the position. Mm-hmm. A C-suite level position could be, on average, the market's probably 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. You know, so we'd probably be 60 to 90 days if they follow our process. If it's a mid-level or director, you know, it could be, 4 to 5 weeks. It really just depends on, there are a lot of factors that go into it.
Cool. I'm getting a signal here from Dan, but I'm going to ask you one more thing, right?
Okay.
What is the ideal client for you? The company is it a super large pharma? You're in Indiana somewhere. Is it like a Lilly, or is it the guy working out of his garage? Is it somewhere in the middle? What's the ideal thing for med tech recruitment?
I mean, we could help a big company a lot, but we work less and less with the big companies because, unfortunately, they tend to be more red tape, more HR, slower, and you should do a backflip because you're in the same room with me from a contract terminology standpoint. So we're probably 70% of our business are startups that are A, B, or C funding that already have a product, but now they're moving to bring the product on the market. They are moving to commercialization. Or mid caps that are growing. You know, we have one right now in the last 3 years gone from $40 to $150 million. So, you know, mid caps anywhere up to $2-3 billion is probably our sweet spot. I mean, we have some clients that make 20, 40, 50 billion. We work with one of the largest CDMOs in the world. But those startups and those growing mid caps, in terms of top talent accelerant, how we brand them, protect their value prop in the marketplace, a lot of the efficiency, again, cost of mishires, lower employee engagement, annual voluntary turnover are a problem for everybody. But, you know, in terms of size, the smaller you are, the more painful it can be. So those are the companies that probably, and I'll just clearly say that if a company really doesn't understand why companies succeed and fail, and they don't value that attraction piece and the personal why matching the mission statement and the culture, then they're probably not a good fit for us, and vice versa.
Cool. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you, Darwin. I think this has been very interesting for people who are listening. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. Thank you for listening to Health 411. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University's efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. Again, I'd like to thank Darwin Sherwig, founder and CEO of Sherwig Solutions, a med tech recruitment company. Thank you again, Darwin. This has been a really good conversation, I think, for our students and our listeners. If anyone has comments or questions about this program or want to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411 to listen to past episodes or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the Weekend Rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.